Welcome to the Azure Security Podcast, where we discuss topics relating to security, privacy, reliability, and compliance on the Microsoft Cloud Platform.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 110. This week is myself, Michael, and I'm here with Gladys, and our guest is Sharon, who's here to talk to us about securing Gen AI apps with Entra. This is number 3 of 4. So if you haven't seen or listened to the other two, I would probably urge you. They are kind of independent of each other, but it's worthwhile looking at episodes 1 and 2. But before we get to our guest, let's take a little lap around the news. Gladys, why don't you kick things off?
Okay, so I only have two news articles that I'm going to talk about. The first one is regarding Defender for Endpoint in Azure Government. As some of you may know, we are deprecating Log Analytics Agent, or MMA, you see that acronym around, in Azure. So in order to enable capabilities with file integrity, a new file in integrity monitoring, or FIM, has been developed and now is general availability in Azure Government. So just make sure that you are able to migrate this configuration, because soon that functionality will stop working. But basically, it allows you to meet compliance requirement by monitoring critical files and registry in real time and auditing the changes. It also helps you identify potential security issues by detecting suspicious files, file content changes, and things like that. The next news that I wanted to talk about, which I think is very relevant to this talk today, and so I'm not going to talk a lot about it, is that about Microsoft Graph. Microsoft Graph is one of the most important aspects that enables AI. And in order to secure access that is being done through the Microsoft Graph, there are several permissions that have been developed, and more extensions are being enabled. So there's more extensions that have been released lately. There's an article that I'm putting as part of the website. And hopefully we talk a little bit more during our talk in the next few minutes.
I have a couple of items. Actually, I have more than a couple. I have like 5 or 6 items. So the first one is we've now added a thing called API Security Posture Management. As you probably know, most web, most cloud-based applications use REST endpoints of some kind. And what this this new capability allows is things like identifying APIs that are exposed to the internet, automatically discovering sensitive information that may be traveling through those endpoints. There's all sorts of other things that it does as well. So well worth looking into that if you're using REST endpoints, which odds are good you are. Next item is the general availability of FIPS 140 Level 3 HSM's Premium Key Vault is now available in China. This is good to see. It's good to see, very robust ways of storing credentials and secrets and keys. Next one, which has got nothing to do with securing or storing credentials at all, which is the way you should go, which is Fabric Data Warehouse now supports service principles. Huge fan of using things like service principles and managed identities rather than storing a credential somewhere. So this is always good to see. Next one, which actually has nothing to do with security whatsoever, but the only reason I'm really talking about this is because A, it's important, and B, it's my old stomping ground, which is Azure Data. So Azure Data Studio is being retired. The actual retirement will be, I believe, like February 28th, 2026, so next year. And what we're recommending people do is go to use Visual Studio Code with the appropriate MS SQL extension. If you kind of look at it, I don't know if you guys know or not, but essentially they're a very, very similar tool. They're written using Electron, both tools are, and the code bases, it's kind of similar in some, and they kind of look the same and feel the same. So just didn't really make sense having two bits of code that were kind of the same. So anyway, that's what we're going to do. So Azure Data Studio is being retired, and you should be moving over to using VS Code with the MS SQL extension, and frankly, all the other extensions that you would normally have as well. A good friend of the podcast, Meryl Fernando, has a couple of posts up on X talking about Microsoft Graph permissions, as well as talking about some ways of detecting device code flow. So the first one on Microsoft Graph, there's a new least privilege permission that's been added. Historically, if you wanted to see if somebody had their account enabled or disabled, you would probably have to grant something like read-write.all, which is a lot more than just asking to determine if an account is enabled or not. So the Microsoft Graph folks have actually added a new grant called Enable Disable Account, and just grant, you know, an account or a principal that particular permission, and off you go. So you know you're really restricting what the user can actually access. And then the last one, the ability to block device code flow, and this is available now in Microsoft Entra ID Conditional Access. Device code flow just should not be used. It's an incredibly insecure OAuth2 flow, and you just shouldn't use it. And so now you can block it, which is really, really cool. All right. So now we've got the news out of the way. Let's turn our attention to our guest this week. As I mentioned, it's Sharon, and she's here to talk to us about securing Gen AI apps with Entra. Again, this is part 3 of a 4-part series, and the focus in this particular chat is about monitoring and governance. So Sharon, welcome to the podcast. Would you like to take a moment and introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yep, thanks, Michael. Yeah, my name's Sharon Chahal. I'm a principal product manager within our customer experience engineering team within IDNA. I have the pleasure of leading our efforts within Security Copilot and Entra, identity protection. So identity protection is the risk-based policies, conditional access policies, and looking it all up in securing AI as well. So it's particularly initiatives of helping our organizations out there to protect their assets, protect their identities, and sort of really protect their devices when they start exploring the world of Gen AI.
So this is all about monitoring. So can you sort of explain what that means, and also kind of how it relates, if it does, to governance?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we're monitoring access for securing AI, it's ensuring that only authorized users and systems can interact with AI resources. So, you know, in cases, AI systems may handle sensitive data and make critical decisions. So controlling who can access these systems, preventing misuse or data breaches, or if you think about malicious manipulation, by continuously tracking access patterns and behaviors, you can identify, or you know, organizations can identify potential threats or suspicious activities, such as that unauthorized attempt to influence an AI decision making or gain access to confidential information. So when we really think about it, it's the level of monitoring that provides a proactive defense, ensuring the integrity along with the security of both AI and its surrounding infrastructure as well. So it's really crucial to ensure the reliability of those particular governance requirements and being able to monitor them to prevent the vulnerabilities from being exploited, and also ensuring the integrity of AI-driven processes and data.
So recently, I was working on an attack chain that I was drawing regarding how malicious actors may use AI. And I realized that with AI, of course, the original exposure may be like the normal one, emails, endpoint, and networks, so forth. But at the end, where the meat is identity, applications, and data. So how do we control this? Let's start maybe like access review. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So one of the key things that we think about, and you brought this up around, is around access permissions, right? So excessive permissions is really identified as a security risk. So say, for example, you have an employee with overly broad access that modifies, for example, an AI module or some data that they're not meant to get access to. Could be confidential, like financial data. So it's really exposing it to unauthorized users. So when we look at Entry ID and helping how to sort of monitor and mitigate that, we have, you know, RBAC, which is role-based access control and least privilege. So that's restricting the AI module access to necessary roles that do actually need access. And then when we talk about access reviews, is really down to regular auditing and removing unnecessary permissions. So say if someone in the organization had left, if you have a process where, for, you know, I've spoken to multiple organizations where they automatically trigger perhaps a flow to a manager to say, hey, this person is no longer an organization, can you validate that? And it'll be either a click or a yes or a no. That's kind of a one-step prong that you can take into to be able to ensure that the necessary or unnecessary permissions, so we say in this context, are actually removed from that user as well. And it could be also a case of, hey, there's been a project that a particular person could have been working on, and now that project is finished. Do they still continue to, do they need access to that data? No. Okay, what we need to do, have that access review, do those regulatory audits. And what we found is that with organizations who adopt that, they've managed to really reduce their attack service and remove the privilege, kind of the privilege misuse when it comes down to the access permission side of things.
So talking about access reviews, what kind of core tools would you use in order to manage those?
That's a great question, Gladys. This is definitely a question I get asked every day. Well, I'd say partially when I go and meet my customers, is that, you know, when we look at the core tools that's available in Entra today, we have sort of conditional access policies, applying MFA, using risk-based access. Then we also think about PIM, using that's privileged identity management, just-in-time as well, just the access for securing, for example, a service account, looking at sort of the audit logging and sign-in logs. We have those available in Entra as well. A lot of sort of, when we look at the anomaly detection, so we also monitor the access and behavior of accounts that could be classed as risky as well. So we have a plethora of products that are available to be able to help some, just trying to cater and help organizations to be able to reduce the attack surface.
All right, let's start at the very top then. Okay, so we've got access reviews, RBAC, audit logs, monitoring, and conditional access. So why don't we start at the very, very top? Do you want to give us a brief overview of each of these? So let's start with access reviews.
So with access reviews, we have this capability available already in Entra and obviously through Microsoft Identity Governance for those who are familiar with it. You can set up, so say, for example, be part of a joiner, mover, leaver process, also referred to as a JML process, is putting in automated sort of workflows for people who are actually coming on board. So you're doing account provisioning, you could do that. You can trigger that in a template and add them to a particular group. So say if they are engaging, for example, on an AI project, you'd have a dedicated security group which you can compass within a workflow. And as soon as someone joins, they would go through. It's just a click of a button. Everything will be sort of the access that they need will be designated through that workflow. Similar case for deprovisioning as well. We know that can be a bit of a hurdle for organizations coming in, setting up those workflows and templates. Putting in that as soon as a person leaves or an account is blocked, a workflow is then triggered, and all of the sort of the higher privilege access and the access that they have to sort of organizational to artifacts and materials, their systems are completely blocked. So that's kind of a one way of what you can do around access reviews.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about RBAC. What would you do in order to protect the data and the applications?
That's a really good question, Gladys. When we think of RBAC, we know we're kind of aligning to least privilege, right? So in terms of figuring out who your admins are, so, you know, in a tenant, you'd have a couple of your global admins, then you'd have sort of your application admins, and then you'd have your security admins. So these are roles that we fundamentally have built in today within Entra, which you can also see in the Azure portal as well. By really restricting access to, you know, as those who require it, the least privileged kind of side of the business, you're able to really provide, prevent sort of privilege creep. So here you're really ensuring that compliance with policies that you may have already defined within your organization are being met. So by allowing, and you could time gate it as well. So by saying, look, I'm a developer, I need access to this resource by, you know, for example, navigating to, could go to a PIM portal, or you could apply it for a security group. You're then applying the correct permission for that developer. So you're not providing an over privilege on their account so they can run amok, so to speak. You're making sure that you are specifically using those RBAC roles to protect your overall environment.
So what tools would you use to monitor that?
So as I said, you can have that. So they are inbuilt in Entra today. You can navigate into the portal. Typically, what we see is a lot of organizations, they create security groups. By going into the Entra portal, you can use it. You can create a cloud security group. Or if in some cases organizations are in a hybrid mode, you can also sync your groups that you may have on-prem over to the cloud. It could be through Entra Connect or Entra Cloud Sync. And then using those particular groups and targeting it with the in the inbuilt roles that we have in Entra today. So it is initially applying it through there. We don't really see a sort of scenarios where you would do it individually. So say, for example, Sharon needs access to this. I'm actually going to apply just the user administrator role to her account. It's more, hey, Sharon needs access as a user administrator in this portal, or even this particular piece where she might be working on a project, we're just going to add her to that security group. So that would be really consequential of what you would do in the portal today.
So when you're using PIM, Privileged Identity Management, I can time gate that as well, right? So Sharon has access for the next 60 minutes.
Yes, you can absolutely do that. Yeah, you can go in, you can customize it. So, hey, Sharon's just going to get 60 minutes of this because that's all she needs in order to complete her task within her particular role in this particular project. And then that access is completely removed.
Okay. And I really want to stress just how important least privilege is. When I look at, you know, attacks against Azure, like what people are trying to do, one of the biggest weaknesses that we see, you know, people make is they run applications with much higher privilege than is needed. And if that application is compromised, you know, the attacker is now running with those, you know, elevated capabilities. So I really want to stress just how critically important least privilege is. And it's certainly a big focus that we have on Secure Future Initiative. So just sort of piggybacking on what Gladys said. So what kind of audit logs are produced and, you know, how can they be consumed?
Good question there. So within Entra ID, we have the sign-in logs, and we also have the audit logs. You're like, hey, Sharon, what's the difference, right? So the activity logs for the audit logs is really around sign-in, is around information about sign-ins and how your resources are actually used by your users within your organization. They could also be around provisioning, you know, activities that is performed within a provisioning service. Like a really good example is a creation of a group in ServiceNow. If you create that, you're also monitoring that as well. We've been able to add even more. It could be the case of what groups have been recently added, what applications were recently added. I think this seems to be a bit of a pain point for our customers, is really to be able to determine, like, hey, okay, we have a ton of applications. How are we able to monitor this? You have this in audit logs today. Those activity logs, they seem to be that central point that people are navigating to. And the way they're actually extracting that, it could be to a SIEM tool. That's kind of sort of the heavy usage, especially for SOC teams who you need to investigate incidents. So if it could be like Sentinel, we know we have Microsoft Sentinel, there's a connector there. You can connect that, the audit log, straight to an Azure log workspace. And from the Azure log workspace, you can connect that to Sentinel. So all of that information is being correlated in one area for a deep investigation that a SOC analyst may need to do.
So auditing logs help out a lot with security, but a lot of people forget that it helps also in planning, because if you have incorrect configuration, you could see it in there. But I love more things that can be done in almost real time. So can you talk about conditional access as a method of protecting in almost real time?
Absolutely, Gladys. And this kind of brings you to a great point. So one of the areas that we've been kind of working around in conditional access is really to protect AI. So, you know, it could be when we say protect AI, we're talking about sort of gen AI apps. In this scenario, we could use like Microsoft Security Copilot or Microsoft 365 Copilot, which are now, you know, organizations are adopting these and protecting those services from misuse can be accomplished. So, say for example, if you already have conditional access policies, which you would set up through the Entra portal as well, you can apply those policies to those specific Gen AI services, and then that will toggle all of your resources. So that goes down to all of your users. We have risky users, which is part of conditional access policies. When we think of risk-based users, you can silo it down to sign-ins. And users with insider risk as well. And so what we found is through conditional access policies, target your application, right? One of the big things that we've definitely been speaking to across the board is complete phishing-resistant MFA, right? When we think about it, phishing-resistant MFA from passkeys to Windows Hello for Business, or even a point of using a FIDO2 key, for example, that's a really good way to be able to secure who's logging in. So really, that's the authentication piece. And once you pass that authentication piece, it's an authorization. Right, so you can apply compliant devices. So with conjunction with Intune, if you use Intune, you use device policies as well. So being able to put that into action, and I'm going to hamper on that phishing-resistant MFA. I think it's because we have that internally at Microsoft today, is really securing it through conditional access policies.
Hey, this may sound like a really stupid question, but can we block someone completely if they're not using phishing-resistant MFA?
Great question, Michael. Yes, you can. You can set a conditional access policy. So you could target, so for example, you can target specifically to admins. It'd be like, hey, you need to use at least phishing-resistant MFA, like a FIDO2 key, right? So let's talk about a FIDO2 key. If this person doesn't have it, you know what? You can't have access to this resource. But I do want to emphasize that you have to be careful when you're putting these conditional access policies in, because you can select all of your users to put in that group, but also thinking about the group, the set of groups that you may not want to include. For example, you could have organizational emergency access or break glass accounts as well. So with conditional access policy, it's really good to kind of list out who are your sort of high targeted users, and then think about other accounts that particularly may not need that, especially if you're gonna, the break glass accounts always tend to be the top ones.
Yeah, I really want to stress something that's just so important here, and that is people say, oh, you know, I'm just going to receive multi-factor authentication on my phone using an SMS message. That's broken. It is completely broken. If you're a high enough profile target, someone can easily be bribed. Look, I'm making up an example scenario, but we've seen it. If you're a high enough value target where someone can actually clone your SIM card, or have someone, you know, hate to say, but perhaps, you know, someone who has insider knowledge, and I'll just leave it at that, and be able to clone your SIM. And at that point, someone else is responding to your SMS messages. It is actually a real attack. People think, oh, you know, it's all James Bond stuff. It's not. Your 9-year-old child may not be a target, but an executive or someone with major access to the environment may very well be a target. So the world just needs to move away from these non-phishing resistant credentials and this non-phishing resistant MFA, certainly for your high value targets. Most organizations will have them. So, you know, it's not James Bond, it's real. So you touched on integration with a SIEM like Sentinel, but you also mentioned Copilot, Security Copilot. Do you want to sort of elaborate on what you mentioned?
Oh, love it. This is one of my favorite subjects. So for those who aren't familiar, Microsoft Security Copilot, we went GA with the product of 1st of April of last year. No joke. We are coming up to a year of the product being in GA. So Microsoft Security Copilot is a Gen AI powered security solution. And it's really targeted to security and IT professionals to respond to cyber threats, process signals, assess risk exposure at sort of machine speed and scale. So it's you can use it as proactively as you can to be able to really get a hold of some of the attacks that could potentially come in. And along with that, it's natural language. So Copilot there is really as an assistive experience to help SOC analysts. But I want to expand this because with Security Copilot, we have multiple integrations with our first party at Microsoft, that's obviously Entra being one of them, but Intune, Defender, we have Azure WAF. There's so many products, I could lose count, but we've seen that integration grow in, and it really is, when you'll hear me, there's kind of two differentials, like we have the immersive, which is the standalone experience, and then we have the embedded experience, which is really the experience that you can have within the portal. So say, for example, today that would be in the Entra portal as well.
Do you want to give me an example of what a query might look like?
It could, okay, so say if I'm in, it could be either, right? So I really get to say it could in either. Say if a SOC analyst wants to go in, or it could be an identity analyst, it could be an identity admin, and they want to know like who are the high-risk users. So you can go directly into the experience, type it in, literally as you would, and I would really recommend be as verbose as you want. So say it's a one-on-one conversation that I'm having with either Gladys or Michael, I want to be as descriptive as possible. So if I go in, pop in, say, I would like to know the top five risky users identified as high risk within my tenant. And I'm a big table person. I'll ask for it to be converted into a table. What Security Copilot will do, it will reason over like, okay, what is Sharon asking me? Now I need to differentiate. Let me pull that. And then we're going to see which plugin that is. Okay, that's the Entra plugin. It will then go to the orchestrator, figure out exactly what needs to do. And I do want to emphasize that we do have responsible AI catering around that before you actually get a full response. And then it will bring back a response to me and say, these are all your five top users. And hopefully there aren't five, there may be three. That's the big hope. But you'll get that list and you can basically share that information as well. So within Copilot today, within the actual standalone experience or the immersive experience, you have workspaces, so you can actually share that with another analyst if there is actually like an investigation that's going like, hey, look, I've actually found this, let me share this with you. Or if you want to export that information, you can also export that information as well.
If there's some analysts that are working together and one analyst has access to some data but the other doesn't, how do they share across? Can the second analyst have access to that information?
So in Security Copilot today, we're actually using the RBAC model. So say if analyst A is an identity admin and they have access to just the Entra portal and they don't have access, say, for example, to Intune and they need to share information, you can actually do that through workspaces. So if there's a workspace, you're like, okay, I need to give, I'd say, for example, I'm running an investigation as an admin. Michael goes, I need to share that information with Michael. I can go through the workspace. I can put his access on top of that and say, hey, there you go, Michael. Here's the information that I found in this particular incident, which I feel would be pertinent for you when you're investigating which device that you're looking at as well. This was a huge ask. I just want to emphasize a huge ask from our customers to be able to share workspaces and to also be complicit with the RBAC models that they're actually using within their organizations.
And that's all audited, right?
That is correct. Yes, 100% is all.
Yeah, that's incredibly important. You know, it comes to sharing stuff. Cool.
So Sharon, let's bring it all together. How would you put this with an example? What exactly are we trying to protect and what tools or capabilities we're using through that protection?
I love that, Gladys. So when we think about scenarios, there's so many out there right now. If you peep your head into cybersecurity news that's out there, there's companies that are getting breaches. I think as those there's we were just talking about this today, actually, in one of our team meetings, how, you know, there's health professionals that are particularly, you know, they'll be using ChatGTP, sharing sensitive information. There could also be scenarios where people are using sort of the external tools. It could be IPs or intellectual protection, details that they're sharing in ChatGTP as well. So when we kind of think about AI systems, it's and how to protect it from an identity or even devices, and looking at security frameworks, is with monitoring, you're continuously tracking AI interactions, right? That's user access and system behavior to identify anomalies, preventing security breaches and enforcing policies. And the governance piece is really establishing security frameworks. So that's where we've talked about role-based access controls, compliance rules, and data protection policies to ensure that AI operates securely, and massive emphasis on ethical, right? That's always like, hey, am I sure that the information that I'm actually getting from AI is accurate as well? So when we think about Entra and what it does, just to kind of put it all together, Entra provides that robust identity governance framework from least privileged access to automated account lifecycle management, doing granular role assignments. And if we think about Azure, that's down to management groups, subscription, and resource groups, and even looking at sort of resource levels. So that's really ensuring that precise access control. You can block apps. You can go in and say, actually, do you know what? I don't want anybody at this organization to be accessing ChatGPT to be taking that information that's internal, that's under NDA. We shouldn't be putting that into external tools as well. Really, with access reviews, we've touched on it. The integrated that we have today is integrated with ML-driven insights. So it's continuously evaluating and optimizing permissions for AI applications, so reducing privilege creep and mitigating those security risks as well. So really, if we were to think about it, monitoring all of this and monitoring the capabilities of creating applications, organizations, you know, can achieve that sort of zero trust element of identity management. So reducing the attack surface and the AI workload protection that you can have with Entra ID.
Yeah, there's a couple of things I want to add here. First of all, I actually know quite a few companies who have actually blocked access to ChatGPT and other tools of that ilk as well, because they're public. And you don't want to start, hey, we're about to acquire a company, please give me some wording to use in the cover letter, right? Now all of a sudden you've disclosed potentially to somebody that, you know, you're about to purchase a company. So yes, I know a lot of companies that have actually blocked access to, large language model tools like ChatGPT and so on, and rather use tools like, Azure AI, using their own subscription. That way the data stays within their own environment and doesn't, it's not used for any other purpose. The other thing I really want to point out is there's multiple ways of mitigating, these sort of issues. And a really interesting way of kind of looking at it is you kind of have preventative controls and then detective controls and responsive controls. And so for the preventative controls, which your first one is just like RBAC, right? Just blocking someone from doing something, preventing access to ChatGPT and other tools, right? So they are all preventative controls. And least privilege is another example of that. And then you have detective controls, which is your monitoring, your logging, your auditing, your co-pilot going into query for certain things, all that sort of stuff. And then finally, you have responsive controls where you respond to something happening. So it's always, I think, very useful to think about what sort of controls are at your disposal in those sort of two or three, I should say, major buckets.
I want to add something else, Michael, to what you just said. Even governance, right? Data governance. You have all the sensitive labels, whether it's confidential or public data, which adds encryption to the data itself, or your DLP type of policies. And we're going to talk more about these during the governance session. But this is important because now an attacker can basically, if they get an identity, they could impersonate this person, and I just query to AI. So now you are asking information to the AI. This attacker may be asking information to the AI and acquiring that is that information without actually having to do things like reconnaissance in the environment. So it is important all this monitoring to be in place, and it's important for all the data protections, and we talk about ARPA conditional access to be in place as
Yeah, exactly. They do different things. They're all incredibly important, but you do need to sort of have mitigations or technology in each of those buckets as well, right? You can't just rely on monitoring. Well, you can, but you better hope that, you know, you're catching the right things. But yeah, you got to have the, you know, the sort of the preventative controls as well as the detective controls as well. Do you want to add anything else there, Sharon, or are we done with that topic?
I think we're done with that. Actually, there is one thing, right? So I think what you've added on in terms of everything, all the actions, and I love the emphasis on proactive, right? So we find in many cases where it might be too late. You already know an organization's already been sort of breached. There could be an attack. The information could already be shared with some of these shadow sort of IT elements of using external tools. So I really, I want to emphasize on that. So it's just making sure that you have the right insights. And along with that, with these tool sets, being able to reduce that manual investigation effort. So the key thing here is that speeding up that response, and getting real-time efforts as well, especially during around application threats that the AI can introduce within an environment.
So Sharon, how does a typical day in Sharon's life look like? In Microsoft work life?
Ah, Gladys, it's hectic. If I was to use one word, it's hectic. But at the same time, it's also very exciting. The one thing I could guarantee is that I am learning something new every day. I really enjoy what I do in terms of the team that I'm in. I interact with organizations every day. I'm having a conversation, especially around, obviously, the Security Copilot pieces and along with Entra. And also, I get to work and collaborate very closely with our engineering teams. It's super important for us to listen to our customers, especially when we're trying to support their adoption with their environments as well. While I do that, I also have the pleasure of managing 8 people as well. Wonderful people, might I add. So that definitely adds a variety to my day to be able to help them and coach them and guide them. So that's definitely an element that I enjoy doing as part of my role.
It's interesting. We've had people on the podcast before, and we've asked them the same question about, what does a typical day look like? And even though we ask people, what does a typical day look like? It's funny how many people will say they just love what they do. And I think that's something, I'm sure a lot of companies are the same, but, I've been here now for nearly 33 years and, you get to work with some really smart people. You think you're the smartest person in the room, and 99 times out of 100, you're not. There's a lot of really clever people you can talk to who are very insightful, not just smart, but also making a huge difference. And it's great to be able to work with people like that on a daily basis. All right. So one thing we always ask our guests is if you had one final thought to leave our listeners with, what would it be?
So I think in terms of, when we think of Gen AI, it's rapid, right? There's always a new module that's coming out. I open up my news app, or I can open up LinkedIn, and it's like, whoa, okay, I'm oversaturated with so much information. And it's a stark reminder that when we think about how we can protect ourselves, our organizations, and even our families, right? So because people can download apps on their phone, We think about how it's crucial to make sure that AI is operating safely, real focus on ethical as well, and also, when we talk about organization, that's alignment with organization and even regulatory standards as well. Continuous oversight, transparency, adaptability are really key to mitigating risks like bias, security threats, and even thinking about model drifts as well. So if we think about integrating the real-time monitoring, think about your access controls, think about clear accountability structures, and how you can train or how you can maintain trust and reliability in AI systems as well. And, you know, one thought is that how do we keep up with the trends of emerging threats? Listen to podcasts. Yeah, the Azure podcast is one. There's so many out there. It can be a struggle to keep up to date, but I think that's where you can use the power of Gen AI. You know, go in and say, hey, give me the top 10 news articles that I need to be looking at when it comes to threats to Gen AI, and be as descriptive as possible.
Yeah, you got to stay on top of things, right? I mean, again, as I mentioned before, I've been at Microsoft for a long time, yet I am still learning every single day and actually make it a priority of mine as well. But that's a discussion for another day. All right. Well, Sharon, thank you so much for joining us this week. I know you're very busy, so I always appreciate you taking the time to come on the podcast. And as usual, I always learn something. I know Gladys probably learned a thing or two, even though she knows a lot more about this stuff than I do. And to all our listeners out there, we hope you found this episode useful. Stay safe, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Azure Security Podcast. You can find show notes and other resources at our website, azsecuritypodcast.net. If you have any questions, please find us on Twitter at AzureSecPod. Background music is from ccmixter.com and licensed under the Creative Commons license.